Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. No one likes to hear somebody say, "I told you so." So if Orb wins the Kentucky Derby tomorrow, I won't come back on Monday with my pockets full of money and say, "I told you so." It's just not the kind of guy I am. Now, 2 weeks ago, Caroline Shaw won the Pulitzer Prize in Music. Sadly, there was no way to bet on her, because she would have been a serious long shot and I would have won a major pile of cash. I'm not saying I told you so. I'm simply saying that you should go to our website, soundcheck.org, and specifically to our staff picks for the best music of last year. There, you'll hear this. My pick was this record by a vocal octet called Room Full of Teeth, mainly because of this music by one of the group's members, Caroline Shaw. Caroline is now the youngest winner ever of the Pulitzer Prize in Music, and she'll tell us about this prize-winning piece later in the show. Also today, another installment in our look at unexpected chart toppers in That Was a Hit. And we wrap up this week's series on noise and the strategies we use to deal with it. But first, let's talk about string quartets. They're not noisy. They're elegant. They play Mozart at cocktail parties. They play Michael Jackson's Thriller at Carnegie Hall in full zombie getup. Maybe that last one's just this string quartet, Brooklyn Rider, the ones who are back in our studio today. They've got a new album out, and they're going to play the title track from it right now. It's called A Walking Fire, written by violinist Colin Jacobson and performed by Brooklyn Rider live on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
That is the string quartet known as Brooklyn Rider here in our Manhattan studio, and a live performance of A Walking Fire, which is one of three miniatures for string quartet written by violinist Colin Jacobson. Johnny Gandelsman is the other violinist in the band. The violist is Nicholas Cords, and the cellist is Eric Jacobson. Colin and Nick joining me at the microphones at the moment. Guys, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
A Walking Fire, Colin, is not just the name of this piece of yours. It's also the title of the record. Does that name, that phrase, rather, A Walking Fire, does that come from Rumi, from the poet Rumi?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So there's kind of a Persian cast to your three miniatures.
Yeah. As you may remember, we've worked a lot with a great musician, Kahan Kalhor, and
Great Persian fiddler,
and he's been a big inspiration to all of us. But particularly in terms of writing music, I've just been inspired by both sort of the music that he plays, but also the culture behind it and the sense of amazing connection between the visual arts and the music and the calligraphy and the miniature painting. So this is one of three miniatures that I wrote for sort of the reopening of the Islamic art galleries at the Met Museum, and was inspired by the amazing collection of miniature paintings they have there, in which, you know, almost, epic stories are told in very small spaces. And the decorative arts, the borders and everything, are the decoration is ecstatic. You know, it's almost as beautiful as the actual images.
Right. There's kind of a through connecting theme, Nick, to the pieces on this record. It's Colin's three miniatures with the Persian flavor to it. Béla Bartók's second string quartet. So that's kind of standard rep, quote unquote. But that has kind of a folk theme to it as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think all of this music on Walking Fire, and Bartók actually is a really good platform for that. As a model musician for us, is somebody who went out into the world to seek new musical resources. And you know, that has served as a model for composers after Bartók. So certainly for Colin, if I dare say, you know, that model existed out there. But also for Liova, who wrote the other piece on this CD,
right,
who took inspiration
from Romanian music. Yeah.
So that's all there. And The Walking Fire really refers to that sense of travel and being your passion being ignited by a sense of place.
And the idea that a classical tradition and folk traditions not so dissimilar after all. I mean, Bartók went tramping around the countryside of Eastern Europe with, you know, one of those big old early 20th century recorders.
Yeah. I love the quote that Nick turned me on to of Bartók, where he talks about, you know, a folk song from a village in Transylvania being as much a perfected musical art as a sonata of Beethoven or Haydn. You know?
Mm-hmm. So now Liova, who is known as a violist and a composer and a world music enthusiast, is apparently a big fan of the gypsy string group known as Tarafta Hayduk,
yeah,
which is they lost their lead singer and fiddler two years ago?
I think they lost one of their lead guys recently, but his piece is referring to someone who passed away about 10 years ago,
okay,
I think.
Okay, well, it's more than, all right.
But he was one of the original forces and great storytellers in the group.
And his nickname was Kulai, mm-hmm. C-U-L-A-I,
mm-hmm.
And that's the name of this suite.
Exactly.
So, you know, there are some unusual sounds during the course of this piece. I mean, there's like the kind of fiery gypsy fiddling music we expect. There's also a kind of weird scratchy sound, which...
Actually, Johnny's got his fiddle rigged to produce that.
Right.
And now he's walking over the
all
microphone.
Right. So what do we got here, Johnny?
It's one bow's hair. You know, one hair
One
tied,
horse hair from a bow.
One horse hair from a bow tied to a string, tied around a string, and then I pull it with my right hand, so it sounds something like this.
Wow.
Apparently that was one of Kulai's trademarks. Like he
that
kind
was
of
like his trademark
that,
sound.
Yeah, that
yeah.
was his thing.
You can see it in that movie, Lachodrom, by the director Tony Gottlieb.
Mm-hmm. Which, Lachodrom is this movie that follows the Roma, or gypsy people,
you know, through their journey over the centuries from like Rajasthan in India through the Near East and into the
Spain
Balkans and,
yeah.
and Spain. Yeah. So that sound is part of this this piece called Kulai, which is in what, five parts?
Yeah, five parts. Kind of goes through, it tells this story of a life, basically.
Mm-hmm. Liova, real name Lev Zhorbin, violist himself, presumably Nick has written some nifty parts for your instrument.
He's written a lot of nifty parts for everybody in this piece. It's jam-packed. It's
All
really
right.
fun.
You want to play The Muse?
Let's do it.
All right. The band is Brooklyn Rider. The album is called A Walking Fire. It is out now. The quartet is playing a Carnegie Hall neighborhood concert on Sunday at 3 p.m. It's at the Abrams Arts Center at the Henry Street Settlement. And playing, of course, for us here in the Soundcheck studio, this is The Muse. It is part two of this suite called Kulai by the composer Liova. The band is Brooklyn Rider, the string quartet playing live here in the Soundcheck studio. That's called The Muse. It is part two of a five-part suite by the composer known as Liova. The suite is called Kulai, named after a deceased member of the gypsy band Taraf de Haiduk, and sort of telling the story of his life. And in fact, the group Brooklyn Rider is going to move right along to part four of this suite, Kulai, from Liova. This portion is called, interestingly enough, Love Potion Expired. Here, once again, Brooklyn Rider on Soundcheck. Love Potion Expired from the band Brooklyn Rider. You'll find a version of that on their new album called A Walking Fire. The composer of that piece is Leova, himself a viola player. And the overall work is called Kulai, a tribute to the late Romanian gypsy fiddler of that name who led the very successful band called Tarafta Haiduc for many years. And that title, Eric, Love Potion Expired, do you know what that refers to?
It kind of makes you think of a lot of different things.
Well, it makes me think of Love Potion number 9.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yes, there's that. I don't know. It feels like quite a romp in the woods. Maybe there's some love in there. There's some potion in there, and maybe it's pretty expired.
Okay. All right. Now, you know, the idea of we were talking before, Nick was talking about the theme that ties this record together, the Bartók, Collins' piece, Leova's piece, the theme of, you know, your travels sort of ignite your musical passion. You guys have been traveling lately, right?
Actually, yeah. We got back from Asia just a few days ago. And right now it's like 8 p.m. It feels great. It's concert time. We're ready to go. Uh-huh. In 3 hours, you know, we'll see you in bed.
Where were you?
We started in Hong Kong, which is such a great city to go to. It really actually feels like New York moved to Asia. It's a wild town, amazing food, and the fast-paced nature. The subways are amazing. You know, you feel at home there. And then we went over to Taiwan and played a fun concert there. And actually, the Taiwan show, as well as the Macau show, which followed, there were, 50% students in the audience.
Nice.
Of, 900 audience members, and the turnout from universities and high schools, it felt so great to play mm-hmm. for them.
And did you guys, Johnny, were you picking up any sounds while you were over there in the Far East?
Well, you know, it's fun. I mean, I think the travel thing, you know, it doesn't have to be something you don't know. When we were in Taiwan, we gave a master class, working with some basically high school students. And the first group that came out were these 13, 14-year-olds who came out and played a movement of a Tchaikovsky quartet. And they played it so beautifully, and it was like, it definitely took our breath away to hear them. And then that was an inspiration enough to want to do that, you know. So it's really, I mean, travel is just, you know, I mean, you don't actually have to travel to be, you know, inspired, and you can catch that anywhere, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, you know, another thing that can sort of inspire you is hearing a familiar work in an unfamiliar context, which seems to be the point of the last, like, three records you guys have done, where you had the Debussy string quartet, there was a Beethoven quartet. On this record, it's Bartók, but surrounded by contemporary works, works that look beyond the Western tradition to the music of the East and stuff. Is that kind of a conscious decision you guys have made?
Yeah, I think the juxtaposition of these works that we grew up with, you know, these canons and pillars of our tradition, classical music, they're completely valid today. And one thing that we love to do is just acknowledge the fact that we have all these friends, they're writing music, we love that music, and to show that actually, you know, good music's good music, yeah. and they belong together.
But the other thing, you know, just to add a little bit is that... you know, nothing we do exists in its own bubble, you know.
Right.
So Debussy is a great piece in the standard rep, but without, you know, it wouldn't have been the way it is without him being exposed to the things that he heard at the, you know, World Expo. So
where he heard Indonesian music.
And it's so, yeah. so it's really, you know, it's just taking a broad look mm-hmm. at what inspires somebody to write anything, you know.
Right. Well, and there's also a community at work here in New York. I know, Johnny, you guys just met this year's Pulitzer Prize winner, Caroline Shaw, who will be joining us in just a little while here in the Soundcheck studio.
That's
so there's,
right.
you know, maybe there'll be something down the road between the two of you.
Yeah, we had a hug together. Actually, Colin and Caroline met, and there was a spilled coffee. So, you know, that's a meeting that you never can forget.
All right. Guys, always a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks so much, John.
Thanks so much.
Up next, we hear from a few more listeners about our question of the week, how do you block out noise? And we'll bring you an excerpt from a recent BBC 4 radio series called Noise, A Human History. This is Soundcheck. We're wrapping up our week-long discussion here on Soundcheck about noise and how you block it out of your daily life. We've heard from a lot of you throughout the week, including one listener who reminded us that blocking out noise can sometimes mean shutting off the radio.
I usually listen to the radio in the morning, but on Sunday, I don't turn it on anymore. I watch it on the internet later because Sunday is the only day that I can hear the birds singing, since there isn't the traffic that there is Monday through Saturday.
Thanks for the call, and I'm glad that we don't air on Sunday mornings. Here's another call that we got from Dominic here in New York.
The reason I block out noise, it began with simply disconnecting from the world, whether it be at church or whether it be at home, kneeling before bed, saying a prayer, meditating, whatever you can call it. It really helped calm the noise, not only on the outside, but also on the inside, and helped me focus and find who I am.
Thanks, Dominic. Up next, 30-year-old composer Caroline Shaw is the youngest person to have ever won the Pulitzer Prize for Music. We'll talk to her about how she pulled that off next.
Oh.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 2 days ago, we met trumpeter and composer Wadada Leo Smith, whose mammoth piece, 10 Freedom Summers, was a finalist for this year's Pulitzer Prize in Music. Now we get to meet the winner. 2 weeks ago, Caroline Shaw became the youngest person ever to win the Pulitzer Prize, and she did it for this piece. It's called Partita, a, well, winning blend of singing, avant-garde vocal effects, and spoken text. Caroline Shaw, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
Let me ask you first, first of all, congratulations. But the piece, Partita, I mean, that's a name that sort of resonates with classical music listeners who think of Baroque music and Bach and those suites of sort of courtly dances that he did. Is that what you were thinking of when you wrote it?
Yes, definitely. I grew up playing all the Bach partitas for solo violin.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, when I first moved to New York, I spent a lot of time playing for dance classes around the city. Just became very tied to dance structures and forms and rhythms in that way. So some of Partita is my revisiting those moments of playing for dance classes.
Mm. So there's an allemande, as you know, as there are in most of the Bach suites. You know, there are allemandes and courants and sarabandes, and you have all of those in your piece as well. But here in America, allemande can mean something else, right?
That's right. It's usually pronounced allemande, right? With a little twang. I'm from North Carolina. Allemande.
Uh-huh.
And I think the pronunciation, we can say it however we want to, but it's a square dance term, and there are actually a lot of square dance terms that happen in the beginning of allemande. You know, swing your partner round and round through, cut the diamond, allemande left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those are actual calls. Those
actual
are instructions
calls
to the dancers as they're doing.
I bought a book a couple of years ago of old book of square dance calls.
Uh-huh.
Kind of obsessed with it.
Did you grow up with any of that?
I didn't. I grew up in eastern North Carolina. A lot of the dancing like that happens in the West, but I've always loved it.
Hmm. There's also a kind of you're part of this vocal group, Roomful of Teeth, for whom this piece was written. And the eight of you can sing just about anything, but there's a kind of rough-hewn quality, almost like Southern shape note singing in parts of this piece.
Yeah, I definitely tried to open our mouths and throats in that particular way. So in the beginning of allemande, it's very much a shape note, reminiscent of shape note singing.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's hear how it works out in the Pulitzer Prize-winning piece by my guest, Caroline Shaw. This is the allemande section from her piece, Partita.
Horizontally and vertically.
Cut the diamond, points, diamond.
One gray,
the wall
one
is
yellow,
bordered and divided
brown
into four equal parts.
A red diagonal line fixed lower left
square,
corner.
A red horizontal
upper
line.
That is the vocal octet known as Room Full of Teeth from their debut album, also called Room Full of Teeth. Caroline Shaw is one of the eight singers and the one who wrote this piece called Allemande, part of a suite called Partita, which really, Caroline, just means suite, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And the piece won this year's Pulitzer Prize in Music for Caroline Shaw, who's with me on Soundcheck. Okay, so There's that kind of open-throated singing that can be associated with various folk traditions, square dancing here in the States. But then there's the tuning thing.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of phrases, there are these odd little twists and skirls in the music. How do you notate? What are we hearing there, first of all?
It's really just a chord that kind of bends out of shape very slightly and comes right back, which is a sound that I love. And we had been talking about a certain kind of tuning that they do in Georgian singing, Soviet Georgia.
Republic of Georgia, yeah.
That's right. So I took that and kind of abstracted it and said, what if we take this one chord and then just shift it a little bit slightly? Mm-hmm. So you guys go down, you guys go up.
So a lot of these quote-unquote avant-garde vocal effects have actually been around for centuries in other traditions.
That's right.
Yeah. But then there's your use of text. I mean, there's the Alamán text, the square dance call.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are these other texts that appear in the piece, both in Alamán and in the Passacaglia that we began with. They have a vaguely kind of architectural, talking about bisecting walls and stuff like that. Where do those texts come from?
Those texts come from Solowitz Wall Drawing 305, which is on the first floor in MassMoCA.
Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art, right?
That's right. And that's where we had spent our summer residencies, where all these pieces were written. And Solowitz, of course, a really interesting conceptual artist, where he makes beautiful, brilliant paintings on the wall, but only with directions. So he gives the directions and someone else executes the painting. So you can actually make a Solowitz painting in your bathroom if you'd like to.
Uh-huh.
So I love how he, all these different directions somehow come together and congeal into this brilliant, bright painting that you can't really describe.
Mm. Those are spoken, not sung.
That's right.
Through the course of the piece. What is their purpose? Is there an architectural purpose to weaving those texts in among the sung sounds?
In an abstract, kind of elusive way, not in an explicit way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the use of the voice singing, speaking, and also breathing. There are moments in the score where you actually write in the score, audible inhale, things like that.
That's right. We had been talking about breath and textured breath in the context of working with two Inuit throat singers from northern Quebec, Evie Mark and Akanisi Sivaropik, and they are...
Easy for you to say.
I'm not sure if I said it right, but...
So Inuit throat singing, this is a woman's tradition.
That's right.
Traditionally up there in the Arctic Circle. And it's two women who face each other in close quarters and they kind of sing into each other's mouths, right?
That's right. It's essentially a hocket.
Hocket being like a jigsaw puzzle. You do note one, I'll do note two. You do note three, I do note four, et cetera.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's also a game, too, so you can change. One person is a leader, one person is a follower, so you can change what pattern you're playing with. But one of the things we talked about is you can't just breathe out as you normally would, but you put a sort of a texture of the breath in your throat. But I just loved this bed of sound and used it for the beginning of Courant.
And a Courant back in Bach's day, this would have been one of the more rhythmic dances, wouldn't it?
Yeah, usually in sort of plays between 6-8 and 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
And also originally I loved the idea that it originally means running, corrente.
Mm-hmm. This is the piece Courant from Caroline Shaw, part of her Pulitzer Prize-winning piece, called Partita, sung by Roomful of Teeth.
Oh,
some of the breathless sounds of the Courant from my guest Caroline Shaw, the composer and vocalist and violinist, although obviously with this band, Room Full of Teeth, everything's done with voices. That's kind of the point of the band. So the rhythmic breathing, there's some overtone and even kind of like Tibetan-style undertone effects. In this piece, Courant, which is part of the suite known as Partita, which won for Caroline Shaw this year's Pulitzer Prize in Music. Were you surprised?
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, you've been on the New York music scene for a number of years now, but I think most people knew you as a singer and a violinist.
I think so.
Now, with like your... was this your first major recorded piece?
Yes.
And maybe it won a Pulitzer. So what do you do for an encore?
Take some time to make more music with my friends, figure it out.
Your friends being Room Full of Teeth, among others.
Among others.
The album Room Full of Teeth has the complete Partita, the four-movement suite by Caroline Shaw. And the band The Knights, the string orchestra, will be playing in June at Central Park Bandshell on June 25th. They'll be doing your arrangement of a Stockhausen work from his Zodiac series.
This is last year a group of friends commissioned 12 composers to take each of the Zodiac melodies, and I took Leo because I'm a Leo. August-born baby.
Mm-hmm.
A quirky, whimsical, muscular little piece.
All right. So Caroline Shaw's arrangement of Stockhausen on the bill for June 25th when the Knights play at the Central Park Bandshell. Caroline, as you know, I love this piece. I was really delighted when it won the Pulitzer. Congratulations, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
This is Soundcheck.
And now, Soundcheck looks back at the pop charts of yesteryear and asks,
"That was a hit?
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
They're coming to take me away, haha."
Time for another installment of That Was a Hit, our series about improbable chart success. We are joined once again by Paul Ford, a Brooklyn-based writer who can be found on Twitter at FTrain. And he joins us with what I think it's fair to describe as a mixed bag. Hi, Paul. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right. What are you doing to me here? What, you come in with one crappy song after another? Is that what this is?
You know, these are songs that were hits that don't necessarily deserve a tremendous amount of attention, but they are... they're each fascinating in their own way.
Okay,
they're
so we're going to do a kind of lightning round here.
Yeah, these are just jewels of weirdness.
All right. Starting in the 60s with Bill Cosby, who has made records, has actually made good records with Quincy Jones. I'm guessing this is not one of them.
This is just a very, very strange song. It's him. It's the backing track is Uptight, Everything's All Right by Stevie Wonder. And then he just sort of tells this meandering Cosby-esque story about a little old man. There's not a lot else going on. It's just a very, very famous man who I think people had stopped saying no to.
1967, Bill Cosby has an unexpected and perhaps undeserved hit with Little Old Man.
A little old man was sitting on the steps, and a tear kind of trickled down his cheek. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "A train just ran over me." I said, "How often does this happen?" He said, "Every day, about this time." I said, "Well, why do you just sit out here then?" He said, "'Cause I cannot believe that is happening." I said, "Reach out. Take my hand. You'll understand."
Well, underneath that Bill Cosby story, Paul, is a wonderful old Stevie Wonder tune.
Right, it's just weird, right? It's not even necessarily bad. It's just, I mean,
but it's also not funny.
No, it's not funny. It's him. Later in one of his comedy albums, he sort of pointed back to that song and said it was inspired by his grandfather. And but
little old man Bill Cosby. So how big a hit was this?
America wanted it. It was number 4 in the Billboard Hot 100. And then as I was poking around and doing some research, I found it was number 8 on Jet's Soul Brothers Top 20. So it really sort of, it covered all its bases. Mm-hmm. That was Bill's great moment, or one of many great moments that Bill got to have.
1967, Bill Cosby releases Silver Throat, Bill Cosby Sings, and that's the hit single from it. That was a hit. Let's skip ahead to 1985. I remember this Paul Hardcastle song, 19, and really liking it. And only later learning what the 19 referred to, because, of course, you know, you don't really listen to the words. It was a dance number, right?
Yeah, it's just sort of him noodling around on the synth, and it's sort of very, you know, sort of good 80s cool synth. But
yeah.
It's all the backing track is all from a documentary called Vietnam Requiem. And so it's all about how the soldiers in Vietnam were very young. They were 19 when they were fighting, and it's sort of all this weird ephemeral talking about Vietnam,
right?
Throughout the song,
and the title referring to the fact that the average age of the GIs who died in Vietnam was 19.
So I mean, it's just so he apparently was Paul Hardcastle was thinking, you know, when I was 19, I was just going out to clubs and hanging out. This is crazy. I'd better make a synth based song using these samples.
And make it really dancey and clubby.
Yeah.
How big a hit was this?
Well, this became, the top 20 in the U.S. It didn't become a huge U.S. hit, but it became very significant around the world. It got to number 1 in the U.K. and cut a wide swath across Europe.
Paul Hardcastle with the song 19.
In 1965, Vietnam seemed like just another foreign war, but it wasn't. It was different in many ways, and so were those who did the fighting. In World War II, the average age of the combat soldier was 26. In Vietnam, he was 19. 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 19.
The heaviest fighting of the past 2 weeks continued today, 25 miles northwest of Saigon.
I wasn't really sure what was going on.
Soldier typically served a 12-month tour of duty, but was exposed to hostile fire almost every day.
Paul Hardcastle with 19. So, pretty grim subject matter, but then you give it the little, you know, scratching treatment, 19, and then the girly chorus. And
it really is. You put a beat on it,
oh,
and they'll
God.
Dance to it. Yeah, no, and the... there's sort of a lot of fun facts about it, like the reason that the sampler could only do 2 seconds because that was all they could, you know, mm-hmm. that's all samplers could do back then. So that's why it's 19, like that's the shortest hook that he could get.
1985, Paul Hardcastle had an international and unexpected hit with that song 19. Okay, lightning round. We land next in the 1990s with someone named Scatman John. Are you stretching the definition of hit here?
No, this is another one that wasn't necessarily enormous in the U.S. It got up pretty high, but it was a global monster. John Paul Larkin is a fairly unsuccessful jazz pianist with a terrible stutter.
Hmm.
And he ended up going to Berlin, hanging out for a while, trying to get his music career moving. It was going better because people were more accepting of jazz. And then someone said, you know what, if we took – and he started singing scat. It was something he could do as a stutterer. And someone said, you know, if we took your scatting and we combined it with rapping, then we could have something here.
Yeah.
And it's 1994, mm-hmm. and it is suddenly – his time.
Scatman John with the song Scatman.
I'm a Scatman.
That is Scatman John, who wouldn't live too much longer after making this huge hit song, Paul.
No, he died of lung cancer in 99. And if you go online, there are he touched a lot of lives. Like, there are very fond remembrances. He was someone that, of course, stutterers, because the song itself actually is about how you can overcome stuttering, and if the scat man does it, you know.
So can you. So can you. So that's him both doing this incredible rapid-fire scatting, but also doing the rapping and some kind of vocalizing as well.
That is the scat
all
man.
All him. Yeah.
That was on an album called Scatman's World, and it had a couple songs on it you should know about, which were Welcome to Scatland, Scatman's World, Scatman, which is the song you heard, mm-hmm. and there was also Song of Scatland. So
there was a theme running.
Yeah,
they had one idea and they ran with it.
Yeah, no, they milked that. And but you know, he got to be famous, mm-hmm. and in a way that he never expected to. And by combining scat and rap, which is either rat or scrap, depending on how you combine it. And you know, like so many other things, he truly was big in Japan.
Paul Ford is a Brooklyn-based writer who joins us occasionally for our series, That Was a Hit, a little lightning round of three unexpected chart successes. Paul, well done.
Thank you so much.
And that's going to do it for Soundcheck today. On Monday at 2 p.m. at soundcheck.org, you can listen in as we tape a live session with the English electropop singer and songwriter known as Little Boots. Her new album, Nocturnes, comes out next week, and you can hear some of it live, 2 p.m. Eastern, on Monday, just by clicking play at soundcheck.org. Monday night at 9, sax player Colin Stetson joins us in the studio to play live. You won't believe what this guy can do with a single saxophone. And all next week on Soundcheck, we'll be talking about musical guilty pleasures, and we kick things off by talking with a music writer who claims not to have any at all, and a researcher who says that a little guilt never hurt anybody. Join us Monday at 9. Till then, have a great weekend. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.